In a lot of cases, especially if you have a tenant that does get a broader use clause because they're a larger national tenant, you need to be very careful not to just copy the use clause and make that your exclusive, because a lot of tenants have the right to do a lot of things, but as far as exclusives, they should maybe only have a very narrow exclusive. For example, if you have a home improvement store, then they probably sell a lot of other things in there that aren't necessarily home improvements. But if you were to give them an exclusive, you would want to limit it to home improvement. When there used to be a lot of big bookstores, now we still have a few, but Barnes & Noble, for example, sells books, but they also have cafe, they also have, you know, games, they have toys, they have DVDs. And so you would not want to give a Barnes & Noble an exclusive for all those things, because then you can't have a toy store, you can't have a Starbucks. So you just have to be very thoughtful as a landlord as to what uses, you know, give the tenant their primary use if you're going to give an exclusive. Think about what that is and narrow it so that the tenant is satisfied that they really are protecting the use that makes the most sense to them. And then you have flexibility in leasing the rest of your center to other tenants that may have ancillary uses that cross over to that other tenant's use. And then the other thing that comes up with uses and exclusives, and these all get very intertwined, are operating covenants. Because you have a tenant that's got, you know, you've agreed on the use and you've given them an exclusive, and now they tell you that they don't want to be obligated to operate in the center. So where does that leave you? So the landlord has to protect itself if a tenant is resistant to an operating covenant. And some tenants will agree to operating covenants. It's not a, you know, a thing of the past. Most of them will not agree to an operating covenant for the entire term unless you've got a small retailer where you can kind of demand that kind of provision. But if you've got kind of, you know, a normal mid-sized retailer that has an exclusive, they've got, you know, you're fine on the exclusive, they've got these use rights, and then say they only have to operate for a year. So what happens at that point? It's very important for a landlord to make sure that the language of the exclusive says that the exclusive only applies as long as they are operating in the space, and that they're operating for that use. Because if you do give someone the right to change the use, then they shouldn't still have an exclusive for the first use that they had. So all these things are things that you have to think about when you're putting together these provisions, or you could find yourself in a bind where you have a tenant that has the right to be your only electronics store, but they don't have to operate. They've shut down the store, and then you can't put another electronics store in because you didn't put the right provision in saying that the exclusive went away if they were no longer operating. The other thing that is pretty typical for, especially for large national retailers, is they will agree to an operating covenant of one day. And you might think, from a landlord's perspective, well, what good does that do me if they're only agreeing to operate for one day? And, you know, the practicality of it is, in most cases, if a tenant is going to spend the money to build out the space, to fixture the space, to inventory the space, to hire staff, they're going to open and operate for more than one day. They're going to at least give it a shot to see if it works. So, yes, there is a risk, but it's very unusual for a tenant to just literally open for one day and then shut the store. I mean, I don't know that that makes economic sense for most tenants. It is interesting, though. It'll be interesting to see how this dynamic continues to play out, because some of you may have heard about in the news, there was a big high-profile lawsuit about an operating covenant 6 months or so ago, where Simon sued Starbucks because there were a bunch of Teavana stores in Simon Malls, and they had all shut down, and there were operating covenants in those leases. The judge in the case, in the initial case, ruled that the stores had to reopen because there was a valid operating covenant, and they had closed in violation of the lease. Now, that lawsuit got settled, but it does show that if a landlord really takes the time to try to enforce one of these, indications are that you probably can. So I don't know if that means that less tenants will be interested in signing up for operating covenants, knowing that they really are going to be, you know, bound to whatever they agree to. Who knows? But I do throw that out there, and just, like I said, you have to be very conscious of the interplay between your use clause, your exclusive clause, and your operating covenant. And I do have in the materials, I have sample clauses kind of showing some of the language and things that I've found successful for all of these. You don't have to look at them now, but I'm just letting you know that those are there.